Senhor Embaixador da Dinamarca, queria dar as boas-vindas à Comissão de Assuntos Europeus. Esta audição, este convite para esta reunião, realiza-se no contexto da presidência, do início da presidência dinamarquesa do Conselho da União Europeia, e é uma das nossas primeiras reuniões este ano, e, portanto, enfim, é o momento adequado para, no início deste primeiro semestre de 2012, ouvirmos as posições da presidência dinamarquesa sobre as suas prioridades para este semestre, em que, posso dizer, enfim, a integração europeia é, digamos, uma das questões centrais e que preocupa o atual estado da integração, que preocupa não só, enfim, as instituições europeias, mas também muitos Estados nacionais e cruciais mesmo para, não só para a economia e para a situação de vários Estados-membros, mas mesmo, eu diria, para espaços fora da Europa. Diria, muitos dizem até que o destino da economia mundial depende da sorte da integração europeia nos próximos meses. Queria agradecer-lhe a presença. Vamos ouvir primeiro a apresentação sobre as prioridades da presidência dinamarquesa. Queria também informá-lo que esta audição está a ser gravada e irá mais tarde ser também reproduzida no canal do Parlamento. E, seguidamente, abriríamos um período de debate ou discussão em que eu darei a palavra aos diversos grupos parlamentares para fazerem perguntas. Queria também agradecer-lhe, sei que trouxe uma pequena lembrança, um pequeno presente para os membros da Comissão, que é uma pen com os documentos relativos à presidência dinamarquesa. Queria desde já agradecer-lhe antecipadamente isso. Enfim, esperando que, sei que muitos membros da Comissão entendem inglês, nós temos tradução simultânea para quem quiser seguir, mas, enfim, quero desde já agradecer a presença e esperando que haja uma boa discussão posteriormente. Muito obrigado. Tem a palavra, Sr. Presidente. Sr. Embaixador.
Thank you very much, President Mota-Pinto, and thank you very much to the Commission and to the members who are here for receiving me and giving me the chance to make a few highlights regarding the Danish EU presidency, which will last for the next 5.5 months. I do this not to promote Denmark, but rather to display the role that we feel that we have on behalf of all the member states and the union in the next or in these 6 months. I will say a few words about the role of the presidency, let's say in general. I will say a little bit more about the priorities of the Danish presidency, and then I would say a little bit about how we have organized some of the activities or the responsibilities of the presidency. And then I hope that you will have some questions towards the end. It's the seventh time that Denmark is in charge of the European presidency since we joined in 1973. We remember very well our last presidency because in 2002, because there was this major theme of the European enlargement process, which we were happily ending or finishing, closing in Copenhagen at the European summit, where from that time the road or the circle of members of the EU increased from 15 to 25. This was a major achievement for EU, it was a major achievement for European integration, and you cannot imagine how proud the then Danish government and Denmark was of hosting and conducting this process. But things have changed a lot. Things have changed with the Lisbon Treaty, new institutions and new conditions. And this, of course, is the now permanent president of the European Council, the permanent president or chairman of the heads of government and state meeting, Van Rompuy, coming into the picture. It's the new permanent representative for foreign affairs, Countess Ashton, now taking the lead together with the EU Foreign Service on the foreign affairs. So the Danish presidency, or Denmark as president, will chair, let's say, the other 9 out of the 10 council formations. Also, very importantly, the European Parliament has a very important now, a very increased function in the whole legislative process. It's not only a stronger player, but it's certainly a very equal player together with the Council and the Commission. And just today, as most of you are undoubtedly aware, the Parliament elected its new chairman in the middle of the session, or in the middle of the 5-year period. The new chairman, Martin Schulz, took office, and for that reason, the Danish Prime Minister, the chairman of our council, the rotating presidency, is in Strasbourg. They will no doubt have a very interesting session tomorrow, but that's another story. So the rotating EU presidency, as the national presidency is usually called, is responsible for coordinating, for the coordination and the cooperation among the 27 member states in 9 of the 10 Council of Ministers, namely except foreign affairs. And we, as previous presidencies, will have the fortune and also the duty to cooperate closely with the permanent president and with the High Representative. The presidency represents the councils, the member states, in the negotiations with the European Parliament and with the Commission. And we have the duty and the responsibility to facilitate the cooperation, which is so important for the functioning of our union. This also, or I would say the enforced role of the European Parliament, also requires that the presidency is fit for matching and fit for representing the Council and the member states vis-à-vis the presidency. And this falls on the Prime Minister of the presidency. It falls on the Minister for European Affairs or Minister for Foreign Affairs. In our case, for the first time, in fact, we have our new government has appointed a permanent Minister for Europe. And then, of course, it's the duty of the different ministries of the ministers of the presidency. All the expectations of the presidency is that we are able to provide and deliver concrete results of the whole workings of the European Union and to act as the honest broker among the different players in this legislative process. If I should say a few words about the actual framework conditions of the 2012 presidency, and which also were the framework condition of the Polish, the first part of our trio presidency, now the Danish, and after us comes the Cyprus government as chairing the presidency. It is with João Barroso's words that EU is facing perhaps its biggest challenge ever. And no surprise, we are talking about economic and financial issues. In this situation, we feel that it is our central task to do our utmost to try to unify and strengthen the EU, to work to create to facilitate the concrete results that will bring Europe forward. Our role is to build bridges and to keep the 27 together. We have to show the value and the necessity of the EU, not only to the different players, but to our populations, not least. The December summit brought a number of very important decisions to the Union to stabilize the euro, namely the fiscal agreement that we are now working on. This is taking the form of work towards an intergovernmental agreement. This process is being led by President Van Rompuy. The Danish presidency does not have the leading role. We have the role to try and assist if we are asked to do it. But we feel that we have a role in working also, not least, to keep as many of the member states in the process as possible. This is not only a process for the 17 Eurogroup countries. It's not only a process for the 26 member states, whereby I mean except the British, who said early on that they were not going to join this agreement. But it still has to be, the work has to take a format that we try as much as possible to keep the European Union as a union of 27 members. And maybe, I want to say maybe, Denmark's special experiences and the status we have can come in as a help, in the sense that Denmark is probably the one country which has the most opt-outs and reservations from the treaty or the constitution of the European Union in the Eurozone, with defense in some of the justice and home affairs cooperation. We have had to live with that and still perform since the Maastricht Treaty, but it's a long story, but we have the experience. I will turn now to the months ahead of us, the six-month period. The slogan for the Danish presidency is Europe at work. We know that we have only one way, namely to work ourselves out of the present situation, the present crisis, and we have to make Europe continue to work solidly in the integration process. The Danish priorities have been put under four headlines: a responsible Europe, a dynamic Europe, a green Europe, and a safe Europe. I will touch upon some of the main elements, and I will bless you with the full presidency program on a digital pen stick afterwards, and you can also study it on our website. To make Europe more economically responsible has to do with the debt crisis so high on the agenda, and with the December summit decisions about stronger discipline. This is certainly in the center of what we call, under one of our first priority, a responsible Europe. Our tasks include new rules on economic governance to be implemented. It's not only about decisions, it's about implementation. And for the first time, we will have a full semester where the European economic semester will be rolled out under the Danish presidency, which means that all the member states will have to present and discuss their economic and financial policies. Guided by the improved procedures of monitoring the member states' economies, monitoring the structural reforms that we have committed ourselves to undertake, and the, of course, the enhanced budget discipline of the member states, and also, as the last leg, the financial, the stronger financial sector regulations. Another very important element under this label is the negotiations for the 7-year multi-annual financial framework, the 7-year EU budget, which starts on, in a new sequence by 2014. It should be this budget and this procedure, these negotiations should be completed by the end of 2012. And this comes along with major policy areas which plays into the budget and which are each by itself extremely important for the next several years of the European Union within the agricultural policy, research and development, and several other sectors. The one of the objectives of the multi-annual framework procedure is to make more funds available to enhance the growth and the growth potentially, the potential growth areas of the union. And here we are talking about research, education and innovation technologies. Our ambition is to bring this process as far as possible, but we do not expect to complete and have the final agreement on the 7-year budget during this half year. But we hope to provide the necessary and important negotiating boxes for the heads of state and governments during the Cypriot presidency, and not least during the guidance of the permanent president Van Rompuy, to be completed later in the year. Our next headline is A Dynamic Europe. And by A Dynamic Europe, we talk about and we emphasize the long-term growth and the important renewed job creation across Europe. And the ways or the instruments for doing this is the further development of the single market, which is now 20 years old. And as agreed earlier on, the Commission has presented a package with 12 initiatives for the single market, and it deals with as important or the important subjects in this process is completing a European patent system, which will make the functioning of that part of our societies and our industry better, a standardization package, accounting standards for our industry and business, a venture capital proposal to easier provide capital for the new sectors of our industries, the digital single market, which will enable the digital markets and the e-trade to expand and develop for the benefit of consumers, and also to make the let's say the safety procedures for this new sector, which will have a great impact on our economy. The roaming three is one of a series of new directives to make the use of information technology better and not least cheaper to our consumers or to our citizens. And reduction of the administrative burdens on the small and medium-sized industries, which will carry the European industry further in the process of becoming competitive. Also, connecting Europe facilities or the infrastructure within transport, energy, and information and communication technology is a very important part of the dynamic Europe or making Europe more dynamic. It's important for all of us in our different sub-regions. It's important for Portugal and Spain and the energy field to be connected towards France and the rest of Europe. It is also dealing with connections across the Mediterranean and in many other ways. Another infrastructure is the research, the framework program for research and innovation, which is also to be, which also covers a 7-year program period, the so-called Horizon 2020. The third priority is the Green Europe, and we put a special emphasis and see a special opportunity and potential in promoting the Green Europe through greening of the different elements of the European economies and providing, not least, or promoting green growth, promoting sustainable green growth. We will work hard and agree on new initiatives, and we want everybody to join in. This is going to be a common endeavor. We have to make common investments in green technologies and renewable energy and in energy efficiency. And why do we have to do it? Because we have to compete. We have to compete with China and with India. They are already very advanced in renewable energies, for instance, even though we felt in Europe that we were really the unbeatable avant-garde. I'm happy to say that Portugal and Denmark are in the lead in this field. We want to do it by, as I said, being inclusive and trying to seek consensus, because there are different views. We are, many of the European countries are in different situations to benefit from this, but there's no doubt about the direction. We will be working for the energy and climate roadmaps, not towards 2020, but towards 2050. It's a long perspective. And again, energy efficiency and renewable energy are the important elements where we, our two countries, share both the potential and positions to a large extent. A single market for energy, a single European market for energy, is important to make best possible use of our production capacities. And that means expanding the energy infrastructure. We also have to have a strong European voice at the UN Rio Plus 20 Conference on Sustainable Development. We have to put our energy, climate and environmental policies into all the sectors of our economies. I mentioned agriculture, fisheries, transport, and the single market can be mentioned. And again, this is not only to live up to the commitments that we, the EU 27, had made on the 3x20 targets, 20% targets for 2020, but it's to take the union further in this sense. The last priority is a safe Europe. And we talk about a safe Europe internally and externally. Internally, we would like to, not least in the situation we are living through with the Arab Spring and the development in our immediate neighborhood, to put the Schengen system or to finalize a stronger development of the European asylum system, which has been put under pressure, and to ensure that we have the same and the appropriate reception and treatment facilities for receiving asylum seekers. But we have to ensure that we have a well-functioning Schengen system and a well-functioning asylum system, and that our cooperation is based on common views, even though our geographical positions within Europe can be different and put different challenges to each of our countries. But for how to meet these challenges, we have to work together and we have to try to establish the best possible system. Also in the justice and home affairs, and I'm not especially focusing on the traditional important issues of monitoring and controlling and fighting terrorism, but also more daily work on police cooperation across the borders and these areas which are so important for the full integration of Europe. One of the results that we hope to see is agreement on a European arrest warrant, which will improve the cross-border police cooperation dramatically. Talking about the external part of a safe Europe, we, like I think all of our partners, would like to see a stronger European voice in the global affairs, a common European approach and common European policies. To make Europe speak with one voice and to enhance sort of the predictability in European foreign policy and relations with other nations. It is a process, it's a long-term process. We have now created, and I think rightly so, the European High Representative for Foreign Affairs and the European External Action Service. We are creating a European Common Foreign and Security Policy. We have to support it, we have to be behind it, we have to facilitate it. And for the Danish presidency, like it would be for, I think, all or most other member countries, not least the small and the medium size, we have a strong interest in make this working and make best possible use of it. Under the rotating or national presidency still falls European trade policy, where we will work strongly for free trade agreements. The most immediate and potential agreements is with Japan, Canada, and India. We will review the GSP regulation, the custom preferences for developing countries. We will work strongly for the continued enlargement negotiations. The actual negotiations are ongoing with Iceland and Turkey, and they will have to be brought further, not to be concluded now. And with the other partners and the potential candidates for negotiations, we will also try and bring that further. It's a long agenda, and there are many, many subjects under the four headings. How have we tried to prepare ourselves in doing this? I shall be brief. Meetings now take place mainly in Brussels and Luxembourg, not that many meetings in the presidency country. We will have the informal council meetings in Denmark, there will be 8. We will have the meetings of COSAC, meaning the parliaments, European commissions, the chairman's meeting and the plenary meeting, both in Copenhagen in January and in April. But first and foremost, the Danish presidency is Brussels-based presidency. We have tried as much as possible to delegate the negotiation competences to our permanent mission in Brussels, which has been heavily reinforced, contrary to the capitals, but of course in close cooperation with Copenhagen, it goes without saying, where the foreign ministry will be coordinating the work under the responsibility of the Prime Minister and on behalf and together with all the line ministries. The last few remarks is that we will have a low-cost or rather a cost-effective presidency. We feel this is the best signal to our populations that in an economic crisis the presidency should also be aware of the cost factor, and we can still make a good job. We will have the ambition to have an open and transparent presidency, accessible not only, of course, to the partners and the many players from the official and from the civil part of Europe, but also for the populations and the parliaments, of course. Our tools are the traditional media, the website, and a very intensive outreach activities towards the media and towards the public. The website is not surprisingly called EU2012, but this time .dk, and there you will find calendars and agendas and the president priorities and the president program and a lot of other useful informations. We will today leave with you the slides of this presentation and our four priorities in a very compressed version, but you will also find access to the presidency program with all the individual items and the calendar. My last remark would be that a presidency is only a big collective of people and individuals, and the same goes for the Danish. Denmark has a new government since October this year. We have a new prime minister who will be heading our presidency effort, but not be heading the European Council. But she will be conducting the work in Denmark and overseeing the work. There's a new team in the foreign ministry. We have never before had four full cabinet ministers, and on the picture you see, we have the Minister for Development Cooperation, the Minister for Trade and Trade Policy, we have the Foreign Minister, and we have the Minister for European Affairs. He's the one with the red tie. He is also Social Democrat, but that is not the point. And he will, of course, have the most hard schedule in conducting the General Affairs Council and meeting in the parliament, not least, but together with other ministers. And then we have a new chairman of the Danish Parliament's Committee for European Affairs, Mrs. Eva Kjer Hansen, who is an experienced, also former cabinet minister. And you know the Danish European or Europe Committee has the power, the very strong power, to give the government, which is also, and also this time, a minority government, a mandate for all the negotiations they are taking part into in the council meetings. And therefore, we have probably the strongest Europe committee or commission among all the 27 members, and it works very well. So with these words, thank you very much for listening to me. And please, if you have questions.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Embaixador. Queria agradecer-lhe esta exposição e esta apresentação. Agradecer-lhe também o facto de nos deixar a apresentação. Eu penso que se pode dizer-se com certeza que os nossos dois países partilham posições, não só o interesse em que a presidência dinamarquesa seja bem sucedida no que toca à crise financeira e no que toca à resolução da crise do euro e na manutenção da coesão, não só na zona euro, mas também entre os países, entre todos os países da União Europeia. Eu reparei que tinha escrito manutenção dos 17, dos 26 e dos 27 coesos, mas também, por exemplo, em que não haja uma governação da União Europeia através de um diretório, mas que enfim, esses mecanismos de governação sejam aperfeiçoados com a intervenção de todos os Estados-membros. Eu penso que é agora a altura de passarmos a perguntas, é uma ocasião para também, não só em relação à presidência, mas penso que também sobre as posições da Dinamarca, sobre algumas destas questões, para ouvirmos o Sr. Embaixador, do país que neste momento tem a presidência do Conselho da União Europeia, e eu começaria pelo Partido Socialista, o Sr. Deputado Pedro Silva Pereira.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Queria cumprimentar o Sr. Embaixador, agradecer a sua presença e as preciosas informações que nos transmitiu sobre as orientações e as prioridades da presidência dinamarquesa. Nós estamos todos bastante conscientes do novo figurino das presidências que decorre das alterações institucionais que foram introduzidas. O Sr. Embaixador referiu-se a isso, em particular no que diz respeito à presidência do Conselho, mas a verdade é que o impulso que se continua a esperar de uma presidência permanece relevante para que a Europa possa enfrentar os seus problemas e os seus desafios. Sobretudo num momento como este, que é um momento difícil. Poucas vezes no passado se falou tanto de um risco de vida para o próprio projeto europeu, não apenas para o euro, mas, por consequência, também para o próprio projeto europeu. E, portanto, este momento desafia-nos a todos. E o contributo especial que uma presidência pode dar num momento tão delicado como este é certamente um desafio que a Dinamarca não deixará de assumir. Eu queria transmitir ao Sr. Embaixador, em nome do Partido Socialista, que registamos com muito apreço o sentido geral e as prioridades que estão afirmadas no programa da presidência dinamarquesa, em particular não apenas o desenvolvimento da agenda que corresponde à assunção de uma responsabilidade na Europa, de uma Europa responsável no plano orçamental à altura dos compromissos que foram recentemente firmados, mas também de uma agenda mais vasta do que isso, que é muito importante para o futuro da Europa. Em particular, a ideia de uma Europa dinâmica, porque realmente só uma Europa dinâmica e aberta à inovação poderá ser uma Europa competitiva e capaz de inverter aquele que é o problema geral, que transcende todas as conjunturas, e que é o problema de um risco de declínio económico e político do espaço europeu. Portanto, uma Europa dinâmica e também uma Europa verde. E como o Sr. Embaixador disse, nesse ponto as nossas preocupações e a nossa agenda política convergem bastante, em particular no tema da energia. E, portanto, queria sinalizar ao Sr. Embaixador, pedir-lhe que transmitisse ao Governo e à Sra. Primeira-Ministra da Dinamarca o apreço com que o Partido Socialista em Portugal vê a orientação definida para a presidência dinamarquesa. Gostaria de lhe colocar duas questões apenas. A primeira tem que ver com uma realidade que não está escrita nos tratados, mas que tem feito parte do funcionamento da Europa. Não é completamente nova, mas assumiu proporções, essas sim, singulares nos últimos tempos. Tem que ver com a existência de uma cooperação bilateral no interior desta cooperação multilateral do projeto de integração europeia. Porque, de facto, foi desenhado um figurino institucional para a Europa. Esse figurino tem as suas dificuldades e as suas limitações. Nunca substituirá a realidade da política, a realidade da distribuição dos poderes, tal como eles existem na comunidade internacional e no seio da Europa também. Mas o que lhe perguntava é como é que a presidência dinamarquesa vê esta sua articulação com aquilo a que vulgarmente se chama o diretório franco-alemão e a sua capacidade para gerar uma definição de sentido, de orientação das decisões europeias à margem daquilo que é o espaço institucional onde é suposto que todos nos consideremos representados. Primeira questão. A segunda questão diz respeito ao problema do crescimento e do emprego na Europa. Porque realmente é muito importante, como sublinhei, que a agenda da presidência dinamarquesa dedique atenção aos temas do dinamismo da Europa, da competitividade, da Agenda 2020 e de uma Europa verde, E a Europa precisa muito disso, isto é, que a sua agenda política não fique limitada aos temas estritamente orçamentais e que a própria compreensão do que é a governação económica seja mais vasta do que isso. E o que lhe perguntava, na sequência disso, é apenas o que é que podemos esperar da voz da presidência dinamarquesa no que diz respeito a uma agenda mais ampla para a construção do futuro da Europa. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. As respostas seguir-se-ão imediatamente às perguntas. Sr. Embaixador, tem a palavra para responder.
Muito obrigado, e vou certamente bring to Denmark your message of support, a message of support we actually feel from the whole specter of Portugal. But it's very highly valued. With regard to the ongoing negotiations and sort of the different roles that different member countries have been taken in order to lead the process further, I would say we are all very much affected of the situation in which we find ourselves. And it may be a little bit different for different countries, but we are all so much affected by the economic and the financial problems that we have with debts, with the Eurozone and so on, whether we are inside or outside. So something has to move forward. And we, of course, as a small member country and now in the presidency chair, support strongly that we work according to the European community process with giving the right role, the strongest role, to the Commission, to the Council, to the Parliament. But of course we also have to face realities, that we are countries of different size. And it has always been like that in Europe, that in certain stages some are moving or pushing more than others. So let's focus our ambition on trying to maintain and strengthen the European method, the community method. Let's do everything we can to keep our 27 member states together as much as possible. There are already areas where we are cooperating in a slightly different way. So we are not the ones to complain that certain countries may move or be pushing stronger than others, but we have all to work together to try and get it into the normal procedures. I don't think I need to go further in answering this question. It's true that, again, coming back to the situation in which Europe finds itself at the moment, economically and financially, we are faced with big challenges, and more than that, we are faced with a crisis. No doubt we have to consolidate our national and our European economic situation. The difficulties of the Eurozone is also the difficulty of the 10 countries that are not yet members of the Eurozone or the Eurogroup. And we feel that the consolidation process of getting balances is a precondition for moving on to maintain the growth, or coming back to the stronger growth, and to maintain and develop our competitiveness. And that's why we say a dynamic Europe is not only the responsible Europe, but it's the Europe where we have to put emphasis on the growth. Green growth, as I mentioned, is a part of it. The internal market, the further developing of the internal market is so important. There shall be no doubt that growth is the instrument for bringing Europe further. So there's a strong emphasis also by the presidency on this. And I think there's an even stronger or growing emphasis on not to neglect the growth aspect. Of course, not least for the program countries like Portugal. You are in the most exposed situation, and your prime minister made that point also when our prime minister was here in December and discussed the presidency. Thank you.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Embaixador. Passamos ao Partido Social Democrata, Sr. Deputado António Rodrigues.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Sr. Embaixador, é um prazer e uma honra tê-lo aqui connosco a discutir as prioridades da presidência dinamarquesa para este semestre, particularmente com um programa que nos trouxe com, como é normal, uma dose de ambição, de expectativa e até de esperança relativamente àquilo que são os desafios dos próximos 6 meses na União. É, no entanto, uma ambição de continuidade, mais do que uma ambição de desafio. É uma ambição de estabilizar, a alguma forma, que a Europa passa por um período menos bom, menos próprio, menos adequado, mas tem desafios grandes pela frente e a Presidência tem, mesmo que não tenha competências institucionais, tem seguramente, do ponto de vista político, uma responsabilidade seguramente grande numa Europa que passa pelas tais dificuldades que referi. Isso passa principalmente por uma chave que ali colocou, julgo que é a expressão mais feliz da apresentação, que é aquela trilogia de números, o 17, o 26 e o 27. Porque quanto mais depressa nós deixarmos de ter uma trilogia, quanto mais depressa esses números se aproximarem, mais nós teremos uma Europa unida. Particularmente porque os desafios da Europa são desafios que nos afetam a todos. Todos nós sofremos, como disse bem, todos nós sofremos, mesmo aqueles Estados que não fazem parte da zona euro, sofrem as consequências das dificuldades que espaça na zona euro e, portanto, qualquer presidência que assuma uma responsabilidade tem que ter como prioridade ajudar a resolver os problemas que afetam todos os que fazem parte da União Europeia, independentemente de terem adotado o euro ou não. Mas as duas grandes questões que se colocam à Europa neste próximo semestre, ou se quisermos, as três grandes questões que se colocam à Europa neste semestre são, obviamente, a forma de implementação das medidas relativas à governação económica, o célebre, já célebre six-pack, mas que vão condicionar e vão formatar em grande medida o funcionamento quer das instituições europeias, quer as perspectivas dos Estados-membros, a celebração de um novo tratado, que está em cima da mesa já neste mês, eventualmente será o desafio político dos primeiros 3 meses deste ano e para a qual também deve ser chamada a presidência dinamarquesa a contribuir politicamente para o seu desenvolvimento e até para a sua concretização. E o terceiro é uma questão que também disse bem, mas que é uma questão que já vem, pelo menos da presidência anterior, enquanto objetivo principal, e que se referiu a ele, que é o quadro plurianual 2014-2020, porque é ele que vai criar o quadro financeiro de funcionamento da União nos próximos anos. E, portanto, aqui, até mais do que o próprio empurrão que é necessário, era fundamental que conseguíssemos chegar a um estádio de desenvolvimento nessa programação que pudesse, desde já, dar um impulso significativo para termos uma ideia do que é que vai ser o quadro financeiro de funcionamento dos anos posteriores. Julgo que é neste quadro dos três desafios que se pode jogar a presidência dinamarquesa e é isso que nós esperamos. E, no fundo, e por aqui concluí a dizer, o que é que espera transmitir, o que é que a presidência dinamarquesa espera poder transmitir no final à presidência que se segue, à presidência cipriota. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. O Sr. Embaixador tem a palavra para responder.
Thank you very much for the question, and you were putting things right, or touching things right on the spot. We can promise our partners and colleagues that we will be ambitious and we will be facing the challenges, but we cannot promise that we can solve all the problems, but we will work hard to bring the processes, and not least the sort of the ongoing legislative processes and the implementation of previous decisions as far as possible. With regard to the agreement, the fiscal agreement or the fiscal compact that we are working on, unfortunately not really at 27, but hopefully at 26. It's the main responsibility does not fall on the Danish presidency, but as I said, we will support it and we will be of assistance as much as we can to the permanent president, Van Rompuy, and to the, let's say, the driving member states within the Eurozone, not least. We are extremely pleased that the draft has been made in such a way that the non-Eurogroup countries can join and participate in this treaty on a flexible basis, because that enables, hopefully, the 26 to be partner to this intergovernmental agreement. Maybe one day it can become European Community treaty. What we want to see completed or to hand further to at the end of our presidency is that all these economic measures are put on an implementable footing, are ready for being implemented, and are being implemented and already used as much as possible. And this has, of course, to do with the six-pack and all, and the economic governance issues. And some of them are already in place, and some of them are being used. But we need a lot to go further. Also, and I think not least, to show to the markets that the EU is functioning. So implementation. Then we want to have almost, if not a ready-made, then have all the building blocks, all the so-called negotiating elements ready on the seven-year budget to show that EU is able to move on making decisions. There's always a calendar. There are always countries which have elections. There are always reasons why things do not go fully according to schedule. But it's so important that we are able and are helped by our partners to complete the process as much as possible, so there will be no doubt at the summit meeting in the European Summit in a Council in June that now the big political decisions, the figures, the final figures for the budget, just, and I say just with a smile, because has to be agreed by the member states. So to bring that process almost towards completion is a strong ambition. Could we finish it? We would be happy. But we know, and everybody tells us, rather bring it almost to the close. Don't take any risks in the process. Yeah.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Embaixador. Passamos ao CDS, Sr. Deputado Serpa Oliva.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente, Sras. E Srs. Deputados. Sr. Embaixador, em primeiro lugar, em nome da Democracia Cristã, do CDS, cumprimentá-lo, agradecer-lhe a sua presença aqui e congratular-me e dizer-lhe, se lhe posso pedir fazer já um pedido, é de que, embora estejamos aqui pouco, estamos a representar 206 deputados, num total de 230. Isto é, os três partidos que acabam de falar consigo representam, na sua totalidade, 206, quando o nosso Parlamento tem 230. E congratulo-me muito e gostaria muito que transmitisse esta ideia que sobre estas grandes questões europeias há um amplo consenso em Portugal no sentido de caminhar, como Vossas Excelências pretendem e como o Sr. Embaixador tão bem explicou, em todas estas áreas haverá seguramente um consenso alargado que nos apraz restar de forma especial neste momento. Obviamente que, ao olhar as suas prioridades, ficamos seguramente com, enfim, eu diria mais otimistas, no sentido de que alguém que nos vem trazer, dizendo que, embora estejamos perante os maiores desafios de sempre, está à procura da criação de recursos, procura a estabilização do euro, procura uma Europa trabalhando, não sei se pode traduzir exatamente Eurowork, mas penso que poderá ser assim. Nós também acreditamos muito nisso, pelo trabalho lá iremos. Uma Europa responsável, uma Europa dinâmica, uma Europa verde, uma Europa segura, são seguramente qualquer destes, e penso que não estarei a falar em demasia pelos outros partidos que me precederam, mas será seguramente qualquer destes para nós, será uma prioridade. Falou, no entanto, numa questão que eu gostaria de pedir. Uma explicação breve, porque também não quero amassar muito, Sr. Embaixador, porque sei que, efetivamente, a sua agenda deve ser preenchida. Falou num sistema de asilo reforçado. Penso que foi exatamente isto, sistema de asilo reforçado. Gostaria que exemplificasse mais esta pequena matéria, porque me parece de uma importância também fundamental. Falou numa Europa mais forte e na relação preferencial com o Japão, com o Canadá e com a Índia. Porquê só estas três economias e não outras que poderiam estar eventualmente englobadas? Esta seria a minha segunda questão. E uma última, Sr. Embaixador, que a mim me irrita particularmente, é que é a questão das agências de dotação financeira, das agências de rating. Nós tivemos nesta última semana, mais uma vez, a Standard & Poor's a descer de uma forma absolutamente inacreditável o ranking de 9 países europeus, onde nós fomos incluídos, descendo-nos efetivamente 2 níveis. Não tem uma explicação, sob o ponto de vista financeiro ou económico. É meramente uma questão política. Se é meramente uma questão política, e se me parece que por trás disto tudo estará uma luta desenfreada entre o euro e o dólar, eu gostaria de saber, da parte de Vossa Excelência, se como diplomata, que é, obviamente, se a sua diplomacia, da diplomacia também com a senhora Ashton, Catherine Ashton, se isto vai ser tido em conta, no sentido de haver, efetivamente, alguma forma de pôr alguma ordem nestas agências de dotação financeira que, no fundo, atrasam ciclicamente a forma de nós podermos recuperar, porque têm uma influência decisiva nos mercados e acabam por nos afetar a todos e, de um modo muito especial, a Portugal, que penso está a fazer um esforço muito sério e a pedir muitos sacrifícios à maioria dos portugueses no sentido de efetivamente cumprirmos as obrigações perante a Europa que estimamos e que, a quem acreditamos sinceramente na Europa a 27. Muito obrigado, Sr. Embaixador.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. O Sr. Embaixador tem a palavra para responder.
Thank you very much and thank you for the emphasis of the consensus also on the Portuguese side regarding the priorities. Of course, the four headlines, nobody can disagree. They all sound ambitions for all of us. You are mentioning what we are especially trying to achieve on the asylum and the immigration side. I would say we have all agreed some years back on the so-called Stockholm program, which also has a essential for internal and legal affairs and how to work in the union, and we have agreed to have a common European asylum system to work before the end of 2012. And And we are aiming at having tangible results in amending the procedures in the sense that we all act as the open area that Europe is, and we feel that Europe should remain. But this also means that we have to deal with the external part, both of immigration and asylum procedures, in a joint way. This is the way that we feel it's most efficient. It's the way that we feel is the right approach, but it also keeps us responsible towards each other, and that if there's a pressure on, in this case it has been on in the south and the southeast, then we should try and work together how to meet these challenges. The Schengen system, the Schengen cooperation, is a huge achievement for Europe, that we can move openly around, but that we also can sort of manage and give safe conditions to our populations in this sense. You asked whether I was especially mentioning Japan and Canada and India in the context of free trade agreements. I think we are very advanced in our negotiations with Canada. Our economic and trade relation with Japan is very important, and likewise with India. It's of course essential for us that this is a process which benefits us and which also benefits our trade agreement partners. It has to be on a reciprocal, mutual basis. We are not opening our markets. We are opening for a joint and mutual trade where all the members of the European Union has somehow, in a balanced way, to be satisfied that what we are doing in opening further the trade field is done for the benefit of all of us, at least in the broader scope. Denmark, and I think like Portugal, again, being extremely dependent on our external trade, we are strongly committed to free trade, and nothing can ever persuade us that any kind of reducing the liberal trade markets is the right step to take. On the contrary, and I think we share the view in this sense with the kind of economies we have. You mentioned the most recent developments the last few days from the rating agency, especially one of them, which has taken decisions of downgrading quite a number of the Euro member countries, it was not perhaps totally unexpected, because this was said already last year that some of our economies were under scrutiny or sort of being watched. We were lucky to see last week that both Spain and Italy were able to sell bonds on the market and achieving an improved rate, meaning paying less in interest. And that to me is a positive sign, and that should be taken into the context when we pass an assessment, if we want to do that, of the rating agency. Maybe we should also be careful in not giving them more importance than they have. But of course, you're right, they have an impact, or we believe they have an impact on the markets. And of course, that is worrying. But it's also a reminder to all of us that we have, nationally and not least in the Union and in the Eurogroup, to work continuously on the consolidation, on the stabilization, to make the right decision, to send the right signals, and to show that we are not only making high-level decisions, but we are implementing them. So let's, in this context, also just take it as a remark. We are having a European European financial and mechanism, which we are improving, trying to improve to work better. We will have a more permanent one, which we are trying to bring forward. It gives us an extra obligation to make sure that what we do are robust steps forwards. And again, as I said, the credit agency or the ratings are, of course, sending us a signal that we need to tackle the problems we are faced with. And let's then show that we can manage this. I'm not going to pass marks to agencies and say we should have a European one, or we should simply continue the ambitious goals we have to meet the challenges. Thank you.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Embaixador. Temos agora uma segunda ronda de perguntas em que a resposta será conjunta a todas as perguntas. Tem já uma inscrição, Sr. Deputado Paulo Pisco. Pergunto se mais alguém se quer inscrever. Sr. Deputado Paulo Pisco, por favor, tenha a palavra.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Eu começava também por cumprimentar o Sr. Embaixador e a exposição que fez aqui sobre as prioridades da presidência dinamarquesa da União Europeia. Eu ia centrar-me essencialmente em três tipos de questões. Algumas delas já aqui foram mais ou menos abordadas, de qualquer maneira eu colocaria eventualmente a questão noutros termos. A primeira tem a ver com o facto de a Dinamarca assumir a presidência da União Europeia numa altura crucial, verdadeiramente crucial para a Europa. Para a Europa e também para o mundo. O Presidente da Comissão Europeia disse que 2012 seria eventualmente um ano em que a Europa enfrentaria os seus maiores desafios de todo o processo de construção europeia. Efetivamente, isso pode ser dessa forma, na medida em que há muitos receios relativamente ao próprio futuro do projeto europeu. A primeira ordem de questões que eu gostaria de lhe colocar tem a ver com, precisamente, a forma como a presidência dinamarquesa irá exercer o seu mandato, na medida em que há uma expectativa muito grande que, dada a experiência que a Dinamarca tem, que, dado o profundo conhecimento que a senhora Primeira-Ministra da Dinamarca tem das questões europeias, de toda a sua vivência europeia, nas instituições europeias, e poderá contribuir efetivamente para que esse espírito europeu, que tem andado tão arredado das orientações europeias, possa, de alguma maneira, com a serenidade e com a consistência da presidência dinamarquesa, regressar um pouco à Europa através do respeito pelas instituições, como aqui foi referido, pelo respeito do papel do Parlamento Europeu, pelo respeito do papel dos Parlamentos Nacionais e da Comissão Europeia. Estamos numa fase em que as instituições lutam para emergir de um excesso de intergovernamentalização. E, neste sentido, eu julgo que estes 6 meses poderão ser efetivamente decisivos para marcar este ano relativamente ao papel que as instituições europeias podem ter no processo de construção europeia. A segunda questão prende-se um pouco com esta e tem a ver com aquilo que deve ser o contributo da Dinamarca para evitar que haja um excesso de intergovernamentalização, já aqui foi referido pelo meu colega há pouco, que tem a ver com as tomadas de decisão que estão a enfraquecer excessivamente o espírito europeu e também a aceitação do próprio projeto europeu pelas opiniões públicas nacionais. E, portanto, eu julgo que também aqui a Dinamarca, com as suas prioridades, com o espírito com que imbui a sua presidência, poderá dar um contributo decisivo para que isso aconteça. A última questão que eu gostaria de colocar ao Sr. Embaixador tem a ver com um problema que se adensou agora desde o início do ano. Tem a ver com a situação da Hungria. Esta situação não é particularmente nova, mas entra flagrantemente em choque com aquilo que são os princípios e os valores da União Europeia, dos tratados europeus e a ética com que foi construída a União Europeia. As questões já mais antigas que referentes à liberdade, à limitação das liberdades de expressão e agora com a aprovação da nova Constituição, tem havido uma grande inquietação na Europa. Eu julgo que isto é muito importante também, porque a presidência da União Europeia terá de lidar com este problema, porque é uma questão ética europeia para impedir que haja, de alguma forma, uma degenerescência daquilo que são os valores e os princípios da União Europeia. E, neste sentido, todo aquilo que está patente na nova Constituição húngara, que tem a ver com as limitações do Poder Judicial, que tem a ver com as limitações da independência do Banco Central Europeu, com as questões relacionadas com as minorias, as considerações que atualmente existem, e, como aqui já referi também, as questões relacionadas com a liberdade de expressão, colocam um grande desafio à União Europeia. Neste sentido, perguntava também ao Sr. Embaixador de que forma é que a presidência dinamarquesa poderá lidar com este problema. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. Eu não registro mais questões, embora, se me é permitido, então, eu tenho aqui eu próprio duas questões que gostaria de suscitar. São questões que talvez aqui, enfim, num outro ponto sejam mais políticas, compreendo-se, se não as puder responder, mas gostava de conhecer a opinião. Falou na existência de diversos eventos políticos nos Estados-membros, em particular de eleições, durante este primeiro semestre. Ocorre-nos logo pensar, por exemplo, nas eleições francesas. Evidentemente não quero pedir-lhe nenhum comentário, nem nenhuma cenarização sobre isso, mas com certeza que a presidência dinamarquesa tomou em conta diversos eventos políticos que vão ocorrer em diversos Estados-membros, e este será talvez um dos mais importantes. Eu, no fundo, o que gostava de saber era a que eventos se referia, se pensa que, enfim, por exemplo, no que toca à intergovernamentalização ou à evolução da União Europeia, as diferentes possibilidades nesses diferentes eventos podem ter alguma influência. Enfim, como é que isso foi, se é que se pode falar disso, tomado em conta pela presidência dinamarquesa? Se acha que isso é alguma coisa que se pode tratar, enfim, compreendo que há uma autonomia, uma certa imunização das presidências das instituições europeias em relação a esses, mas é a realidade política e, portanto, é importante também tratar delas. A segunda questão tem a ver com um outro grande Estado-membro. Eu devo dizer que me preocupa um pouco uma criação de uma espécie de dinâmica perversa entre Estados que tendo posições finais muito diferentes sobre o que deve ser a União Europeia, podem partilhar um caminho comum ou neste momento ter interesses comuns. Refiro-me àqueles que podem querer um núcleo duro e os que querem menos integração, simplesmente. No fundo, penso que era importante evitar esta divisão dos 26, entre os 26 mais um. Falou disso e, portanto, eu penso que realmente a Dinamarca talvez esteja numa posição privilegiada, porque tem muitos opt-outs, porque, enfim, também em relação ao Reino Unido, estou a referir-me ao Reino Unido, evidentemente, tem também historicamente alguma proximidade e eu, portanto, gostava de saber se e como pensa que a presidência dinamarquesa possa, mais concretamente, talvez, enfim, limitar os estragos causados por esta divergência. Eu vi, por exemplo, em alguns jornais ingleses, que as últimas versões do Tratado Intergovernamental teriam agradado ao Reino Unido. Enfim, não sei se, em que medida é que isso pode traduzir alguma posição ou não. Enfim, era este segundo tema. E lamento se são questões demasiado políticas, mas esta também é a casa da política, portanto também temos de fazer estas questões. Muito obrigado. O Sr. Embaixador tem a palavra para responder.
Thank you very much. The very apt description that 2012 is a very challenging year, we can only add that so was 2011, When the Polish government took the presidency last summer, they said we expected that we had already passed the crisis, and of course realized that this will have a major impact on our agenda, and now it will be for the Danish presidency as well. But this is the fact. We cannot avoid it. We have to work together, all of us, and that is not only the government and the councils and the commission, and as you emphasize a lot, the parliaments, both the European Parliament and the national parliaments, have a role. And does that mean that we are, again, and I'm partly answering your question also, Mr. President, moving towards a more intergovernmental situation of the European Union? Let's put it away, let's say, hopefully not. At least we will, within our limited abilities, work strongly to make the bridge that we are all in it, that we all are in it as much as possible, whether it's 17, 26, or 27. And again, as I said, Denmark, as you also repeated, has some experiences, so has the UK. This only brings us to say that it is so important for us that we try to say, to realize that we have a common destiny. And we would like to say a common destiny of the 27 plus the new members, which will be joining in the coming years. Croatia is already almost inside the family. But it may well be that we will be faced with the situation, and the intergovernmental treaty will, of course, also add a little bit to that, that there are areas where there might be opt-outs and where some have to reserve themselves or some have to come back at a later stage. We feel, on the part of Denmark, that it has been complicated, not easy at all, to be outside certain important parts of the European integration cooperation. Since 1992. We have managed and we have tried our best to try to keep ourselves as much in focus as we could, even in the areas where we are not fully participating or where we are making our decisions to join after actually the rest of you have taken the integrational decisions for us. It is not easy, but it is doable. But we would like, I'm sure, Denmark one day to be full partners in all the areas. The present government has already made a decision that for two of the three reservations, they would like to have referenda in Denmark during this term. Their term of government, whereas on the euro currency, it is maybe a little bit further into the future. So the ambition is there. You mentioned the special situation that we have regarding one member country, where, and one could say we had, since many years ago, the so-called Copenhagen principles, which new members of the European Union would have to subscribe to, would have to live up to, would have to fulfill in the democratic, the human and civil rights, in some of the market economy elements. And this has worked well, and it has been guiding us very well when we made the enlargement in 2002 and onwards. But with the Lisbon Treaty, we sort of brought these principles into the into the treaty foundation of the Union that, of course, also existing members have to fulfill and live up to the joint requirements that we owe each other, that we have signed up to. And it may have consequences if this is not the case, if one or another member country deviates from this process. And this is the role of the Commission, to ensure that all member states fulfill their obligations under the treaty. The Commission has been considering the present situation regarding Hungary and their recent constitutional and other steps, and they have today, as far as I'm informed, decided that there might be a process following this. And tomorrow the issue will be debated in the European Parliament. I'm sure that it will be an intensive debate. Our Prime Minister is meeting as a representative of the Danish presidency for the first time. It's not so much at this stage, I think, for the presidency to interfere, because it is now the role of the Commission, but of course the Council will have to deal with it, and I don't think that this is seen as an important issue and an important challenge to Denmark as to all other member countries. And we, of course, have been welcoming the remarks which have been made over the last few days from Hungary, but we certainly would like to see those being repeated and confirmed. And I understand that the Hungarian Prime Minister will actually speak in the Parliament tomorrow. So let's leave it at that so far. On the question of the political landscape and the importance for the decision making and the developments in Europe, of course we are 27 member countries, and statistically we will have six or more elections every year in individual member countries, which means there will be an election every second month. Maybe we would say that an election in Denmark is not so important as an election in a bigger member country. Portugal is a bigger country than Denmark, I should say, and we know that this has an impact on government's ability to sign up and be part to decisions. I don't think it's a secret or that we cannot speak openly about the fact that one of the biggest member countries, France, have elections in May, and this of course has an impact on one of the very important issues on the agenda, the 7-year budget. And this is probably one of the reasons why nobody expects that the normal working schedule can be totally work according to a clockwork without taking into consideration that there are political developments, there are elections taking place. Sometimes governments are re-elected, sometimes there is a change of government. Of course, it creates a landscape which we have to take into account. Therefore, it's also important that there's a presidency which can work continuously on the normal agenda and ensure that things move as well and solidly as they can without paying more than necessary attention to the high-level political processes. But in the end, of course, they have an enormous impact. Even an election in our own countries means something with regard to our positions in the European cooperation. But that being said, I think we are much more consensus countries. We know our role, but we also know our important role in the system.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Embaixador. Eu não registro mais questões. Queria agradecer-lhe esta exposição, a disponibilidade para o debate e para as questões que aqui foram suscitadas. Eu queria, não queria terminar sem desejar os melhores votos de felicidades para a presidência dinamarquesa e dizer-lhe que, enfim, esta comissão e a Assembleia da República estará disponível para, enfim, o que entender conveniente. Enfim, manteremos, não só neste semestre, mas também futuramente, a cooperação e o diálogo entre os nossos dois países. Muito obrigado. Ficamos por aqui, senhores deputados, não havendo mais questões, eu recordo que amanhã a audição do Sr. Secretário de Estado dos Assuntos Europeus ficou cancelada, uma vez que houve um evento imprevisto, mas temos uma audição logo de manhã do Sr. Secretário de Estado da Economia às 9 da manhã, antes da nossa reunião ordinária. Muito obrigado.
I think it's very important for us because we feel in this way that we also get the support of the parliamentary players. As I said, we have our full program on a pen drive, which my colleague Manu will distribute to those who are interested, and it also contains the presentation. And excuse me for not yet being able to speak the Portuguese language. I so far enjoy it as music because it sounds beautiful, but I still have difficulty understanding it. I can read it almost. Manu is fluent almost. Thank you.
I'm sure you can understand better than I can understand Danish.
Well, now I'm improving.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.